So this debate, like just the whole topic of sexual misconduct, is not black and white. There's a lot of gray on these issues, and it's genuinely complicated. You know, even people who criticize the use of NDAs acknowledge the value in this context. I mean, on one hand, when we talk about potential benefits, there is acknowledgement that financial settlements have tremendous value to victims of sexual abuse, sexual harassment. And the promise of confidentiality is a huge bargaining chip for people who are negotiating settlements for damages that they've settled. So that's a potential benefit. We've also heard from prominent attorneys, Deborah Katz and Lisa Banks, who represented Dr. Christine Blasey Ford during the Justice Kavanaugh confirmation proceedings, that in their practices, without NDAs, employers would never come to the table with employees who bring allegations of sexual misconduct. It would really leave victims of this sort of misconduct with two choices: take it all the way to trial or let it go. Many victims have their own reasons for wanting confidentiality. Many of them value their privacy, and they fear that these allegations coming to light would have impact on their careers, would have impact on their communities, their families. So they have their own reasons for desiring that these agreements be something that they can enter into. And another big consideration for NDAs of this sort is that there are people who are falsely accused of these sorts of activities, and they have valid defenses. And this is a tool for them to maintain their reputations. Of course, on the other side are the concerns that I alluded to as we started our presentation. One of those concerns is that there is a power imbalance in place, and that oftentimes the accuser is getting the raw end of that deal. The accused is wealthy and sophisticated, and they can financially bind vulnerable victims with oppressive NDAs. Another concern is that, the big one that we started off with is that the use of NDAs allows serial predators to continue to abuse and offend. And then finally, another argument against NDAs in this context is that they could arguably become tools for obstruction of justice, obstruction of investigations, a way that credible complaints of possibly criminal activity never make it to law enforcement or various regulators. So with all of these sorts of potential negative consequences of NDAs in the sexual misconduct sphere, the question has really become ripe for either legislators to weigh in on, possibly even courts, if a case brings this to the court's attention. And the question is, should these provisions be enforced, or should they be void for public policy? I want to turn it over to Sam, who can kind of walk us through that analysis.
Thanks, Karima. And the majority of Texas NDA case law arises, unsurprisingly, in the context of trade secret litigation and litigation concerning other confidential business information. Within that framework, courts have held that NDAs are generally enforceable and do not violate public policy. This distinguishes them in a key way from non-compete covenants, and NDAs often arise or are litigated adjunct to non-compete and or non-solicitation agreements. But unlike non-competes, NDAs are not considered restraints on trade. Thus, reasonable time, geographical, and scope of activity limitations are not prerequisites to an NDA's enforceability. Again, unlike a non-compete, which has to comply with statutory requirements in the Texas Business and Commerce Code in order to be enforceable. Of course, trade secret NDAs are not what the Me Too or Time's Up movement are about, and nobody is on the streets protesting the public policy concerns surrounding trade secret NDAs. There is no case law to date in Texas addressing the enforceability of sexual misconduct NDAs. And it is worth pausing to sort of define what we mean by that since we are discussing that today. As Karima's introduction shows, a sexual misconduct NDA is a broad umbrella term that can refer to a wide variety of agreements or conduct. These agreements can go by many names and take many forms. They can be called confidentiality agreements, non-disparagement agreements, or non-assistance agreements. They can arise from a variety of sources, such as employment agreements, settlement agreements, either of pending civil litigation or of administrative complaints, or they can arise from arbitration agreements. And they also can cover, the term sexual misconduct itself can cover a broad spectrum of wrongful conduct that has very different legal ramifications, from a civil tort, like workplace sexual harassment, to criminal conduct, like sexual assault or criminal harassment. And given just the variety of forms of agreements and forms of conduct involved, these distinctions obviously will have some bearing on any public policy analysis, as we'll see in the slides to come.